Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, Bozo Posse, to Fantasy Football Bozos. That was yours truly, getting ready for Championship Sunday at Arrowhead. I will be in the house dressed as a red popsicle like the rest of the 75,000 that show up for Chiefs Kingdom. I am the Clown Prince of Fantasy Football, D. Munson, and welcome aboard this evening. We are presented by the Southern Bluegrass Fantasy Football Championship. Check them out at sbffc.com and get your ass to Bowling Green, Kentucky next August 17th. You'll be surrounded by fantasy geeks. One hell of a good time put on by their godfather and creator, the good Dr. Brian Harwood. It's Championship Sunday. We're going to break it all down. We're also going to talk all things fantasy football, and we have more than enough nonsensical shenanigans to fill your plate this evening. Without further ado, let's meet our bozos. Our first bozo is a lifelong Miami Dolphin fan. He's disdained the New England Patriots his entire adult life. It pains me to call him an adult, but his entire adult life, he's been tortured by Tom Terrific in the hoodie. He is jumping on the Chiefs bandwagon to root against those patsies. What the heck? One more buzzard on the poop wagon. He bleeds orange and aqua and loves his vodka. Welcome aboard, Mo Man.
Thank you, Clown Prince. Good evening, Double K. Shout out, as always, to SBFFC Nation and our loyal listening Bozo Posse. Everyone raves about divisional round weekend as the best weekend of the NFL season, but I enjoy championship weekend a little bit better. I realize there are two less games, but regardless, I think we have a chance to have two of the best championship games we have seen in a long, long time. These are undoubtedly the four best teams in the league, the four best offenses in the league, and I am certainly looking forward to settling into my couch with a giant bottle of Buffalo Trace and hopefully some historic football games. Clown Prince, it does appear to be chilly this weekend. I know you're going to be in the house. I think you also may have a seat from Arrowhead Stadium. You could probably bring that as a cushion for your cold butt on the actual seat in Arrowhead. So looking forward to seeing this thing this Sunday, and certainly rooting for a Chiefs victory for the Clown Prince to be able to watch the Chefs in the Super Bowl. So let's get this thing rolling. Back to you, D.
Well, Dolphin Mo, that seat that you famously removed from Arrowhead because you thought there was one too many, I might use it as a toboggan on my ride into Arrowhead while I'm drinking some Buffalo Trace. Good to have you on board. Our final ass clown. It's his second to last show of the year. He's fired up and drooling to get started. He has contacted the NFL and Commissioner Officer Goodell once again. Next season, he swears we're going to have strippers sliding up and down the goalposts during field goal attempts and lap dances available in every NFL stadium's concourse. Here he is, always medicated and never duplicated, Double K Kyle Kephart, better known as the Queen City Guru. Greetings, Guru.
Hello there, Clown Prince, Mo Man, SBFFC Nation, Bozo Posse listening audience. I am fired up and ready for tonight's show, but first, another shout-out to the SBFFC. I can't wait until August. I will be there in person. We're trying to get the Bozo Posse there to celebrate the draft and partake in some serious drinking of some Buffalo Trace and other preferred cocktails of choice. I hope everyone had a great fantasy season and is partaking in some great festivities with playoff action, which I have been doing myself. And unfortunately, I picked against the hoodie and Tom Brady, something that I've learned you should not do. And I will be with the Clown Prince and No Man in spirit to see someone finally put the dagger through him. But until they are out of the league, it's a tough thing to do. So we shall see what happens on Sunday night, but we will discuss it further, I'm sure, as we go along. Back to you, Clown Prince.
Well, thank you, Guru. And just so we're clear, How many ladies do you think each of the goalposts can hold next season with your idea?
I think at least six per pole if they're spread out enough. But I also think that they need to add some to the sidelines, especially when we enact a new onside kick rule that will help hopefully allow other teams to have a chance to recover them going forward.
There you have it, Bozo Fossey, a six-pack of strippers on each goalpost. I cannot wait to see that next season. Hopefully Officer Goodell listens to you. Enough of our nonsense. Let's get to our first segment. It's sponsored by Buffalo Trace. A moment to lead us off. Rumblings are getting louder that Kyler Murray, a Heisman-winning QB and MLB first-rounder, may play in the NFL next season. At 5'7", do you think Murray could be successful and fantasy gold?
Well, first, let me say that this podcast is being sponsored by Buffalo Trace for me as well on my couch. And real quickly, Double K, before we move forward, if they're going to have six young ladies on each pole, I think it's going to be important that they not only have a net behind the goalpost, but also underneath the goalpost, just for safety concerns and for lawsuit reasons. I really worry about Murray's size, if we're going to answer that question. He's a tremendously dynamic player. He has obviously shown the ability to make plays with his arm and with his legs. But in this NFL, with these rules, I worry his skill set is not conducive to a long, productive career. He is not the same player as Baker Mayfield. He's not even close to Russell Wilson. So I'd be very leery of drafting him in the first round if I was an NFL franchise, and I would certainly be very leery if I were a fantasy owner next year of drafting him ahead of some proven commodities. Double K.
Well, until he's 100% definitely staying in the draft, I think we should hold off. His baseball agent is Scott Boras, and I would not be shocked at all if he's using the potential to make himself currently eligible for the draft to try and compensate, to take advantage of every opportunity he can to make more money. Major League Baseball has already ruled that the A's can offer him a Major League contract. Major League Baseball has brought in sponsors looking to sign him to a lucrative advertising deal. So I think it's going to wind up being, does he want to take a risk on his health or a more additional guaranteed money? And we're talking millions on top of millions that MLB is going to talk to him because of, they have a far greater interest in having another African-American player who could be a star in their sport than the NFL does of seeing if a 5'7 or 5'7.5 quarterback can take the pounding. And when you look at Cam Newton, who may miss a season, and you're talking about a 6'5, 255-pound man who, after a few years of running around, getting his body destroyed, or Andrew Luck, a big guy who suffered a serious injury, took a year and a half to recover. That'll be a lot for Kyler Murray to think about, especially with Scott Boras involved. Over to you, Clown Prince.
Well, taking the backstage stuff out of it with Boras, which is a great point, I don't like anybody that's 5'7". I know the NFL's working on spread tendencies and gone more the college route lately with quarterbacks, but he's still 5'7". I mean, that's a long way from being 6 foot or just under. I agree. I do not think Murray is a serious NFL prospect in my mind, and I certainly am not counting on him in fantasy next season. A Bozo shot, it's a shorty three-pack in Murray's honor. Who is your favorite all-time shorty NFL player?
For me, it has to be Darren Sproles. He won the Mo Man of Fantasy title years ago, and his ability to be productive at that size for as long as he's been is unreal. So it's Darren Sproles, Double K.
I got a three-pack. I'm going with the 5'4" kicker from the Cincinnati Bengals back in their heyday in the 80s, Jim Breach. The guy was 5'4", but he was clutch. Terrible on kickoffs, but excellent in the clutch. He was also a very good golfer, and he had some super sperm, too. I think he had over 10 kids. Wes Welker, a clutch receiver who always caught the ball whenever New England needed him, or when he went to Denver. He helped them as well. And Elvis Dumervil, a guy who played defensive end, who may have been like 5'10 at best and weighed about 230 and continually was able to get sack after sack. I think he got close to 100 in his career. Over to you, Clown Prince.
Well, Mr. Breach still does not touch my man, Mr. Cromartie. I'm going to go with kickers in general. I happened to be at Chiefs camp a couple years ago, and Cairo Santos, their former kicker, was strolling off the practice field after a workout, and he's literally walking off with Tamba Ali and Justin Houston. I mean, this man is merely a midget, and he's deciding games and on the same practice field with these beasts of men. All kickers that are small, give them credit for being out there. Who's your favorite all-time shorty athlete, any sport?
Well, I guess growing up, it was Freddie Patek, because I realized he was like 4'3" or whatever he was for the Royals. But in my adult lifetime, it has to be Dustin Pedroia of the Sox. His career will probably be cut short by injuries, but he was a Rookie of the Year, an AL MVP at 5'7" when he's wearing high heels. Nobody is tougher in his prime than Petey was. Double K.
Oh, those are two great ones, Mo Man. And I have one baseball and one basketball player, current player Jose Altuve, an absolute stud who gets more out of his size than anyone. And Spud Webb, one of my all-time favorites, who was quick as could be, but also could jump out of the gym. Over to you, Clown Prince.
Great information, gentlemen, and if you haven't checked it out, if you're a younger listener, check out Spud Webb Dunk Contest. Nothing better than seeing a little man jump like he did. I'm going a different direction. I'm going with all the midget wrestlers that have jumped in the squared circle. Quite entertaining. Little Bobo, Little Tokyo. I'll even give you Doink the Clown and all his clown midgets that used to hide underneath the ring. Loved them. Andre used to stack them up in handicap matches like pancakes and sit on them. Nothing better than the midget wrestlers. Who's your favorite all-time shorty celebrity?
This is a tremendous question, and I had to do some serious research to come up with some winners. So I'm only going to give you my list of wonderful celebrities who are under 5'4". They all would qualify for the Mo Man's favorites list, and some of them were surprising to me, actually. So did the Bozo Posse know that Kim Kardashian and Selma Hayek are both 5'2"? I had no idea. Or that the lovely Natalie Portman and Nicki Minaj are both 5'3". Or uber-famous and sex symbol Ariana Grande is 5'1". But the Mo Man's going to go with a towering 5'4", talented, funny actress with my gold medal. The beautiful, down-to-earth Mila Kunis takes home the top prize for me as celebrity shorty. Double K.
Well, from a celebrity standpoint, I'm going with Danny DeVito, who registers, I think, at 4'10". But I got to go back to the wrestling circle. There was one, the Clown Prince. No, forgot about that. Is the Little Beaver. How did you forget a Little Beaver who got a great run in the WWE with King Kong Bundy, and of course our great Bob Uecker did the WrestleMania and said, there's a lot of beaver running around here, if you know what I mean, tonight. So back to you, Clown.
Outstanding. A Little Beaver's been called. I'm going to go with one, Henry Joseph Nasser Jr. I know you're asking, Clown Prince, who in the hell is that? It's Hank, the angry drunken dwarf from the Howard Stern show. This dwarf was hilarious. Howard Stern would have him on. He would be bombed. He was a 4-1 booze hound who would come on the air, slobber all over himself, and Howard would have a lot of fun with him. He was in the old whack pack. Check that out if you haven't seen it. Good stuff. Hank, the angry drunken dwarf. Divisional round fantasy predictions. Let's get on to the business at hand. That was a lot of fun. How much does this forecasted frigid weather that I'm going to be sitting in play a factor in the Pats-Chiefs game?
Well, it obviously has to play some factor, I think. I mean, they're talking about temps below zero without the wind chill at game time. So I don't think we're going to see a 43-40 shootout like we did in Foxborough in week 6. The Chiefs are a different team at home, I mean, especially on the defensive side. It's going to be just as cold for both teams, obviously. The biggest change from years past in the NFL in these games like this, though, is the field. It's going to be covered all week. It's going to be heated throughout the game, so there's not going to be a frozen tundra going on at 5:40 out in the Midwest. And as long as there's not a ton of wind, I still think we see a relatively high-scoring, well-played game in that AFC Championship. And we'll give our predictions later. Double K.
I actually think this could have a lot of impact with this game. I mean, last week they played with the light snow falling, but the temperature wasn't an issue. And actually with the snow, it usually tends to helping the offensive team. But when you bring in extreme cold and potential some wind, the wind chill is supposedly definitely going to be in the negative, and the game will get colder. I mean, it'll get colder as the game goes on starting late. I definitely think it could play a big factor. It could cause more turnovers. Kickers definitely could come into play. That's going to limit the length of field goals being taken. I think both coaches will, you know, go for it in numerous situations on fourth down. But I think that they may also be more conservative and definitely try and run the ball more. But we'll get, I'm sure, further into that as we go. Over to you, Clown Prince.
Well, it's evident the over-under is down to 57. And after that 43-40 shootout with these prolific offenses, the men in the sand think there's going to be less scoring. I know both teams are relying more on the running game as the season has gotten later. But I think it will have a small factor, but don't go nuts with it. I mean, still play your best guys, and we're going to get into that with our predictions. Bozo Double Shot, what's your all-time favorite NFL weather game?
Well, the Fog Bowl is certainly an all-time tremendous game. I've loved some of the features they've had on the pregame shows the last couple of weeks. But as a Dolphins fan, it has to be the 1982 AFC Championship game at the Orange Bowl. It was monsoon conditions most of the week leading up to the game. The field was a disaster. It was a monsoon all day. It was a mud bowl. Dolphin legend A.J. Dewey had three picks to lead the Finns over the Jets and into the Super Bowl, where they would get run over by John Riggins and the Deadskins. Double K.
Mine is the Freezer Bowl, which I apologize to bring up to the Mo Man. I know his Dolphins have lost a heartbreaker 1 week earlier to the San Diego Chargers. But they rolled into Cincinnati on a high, but the temperature was about 9 below, and with the wind chill, it was 59 below. But the crazy Bengals fans were sitting out there with their shirts off, screaming, going crazy, and the Bengals kicked the Chargers behinds all day long with Anthony Munoz, the offensive line, no sleeves, covered in Vaseline, and they dominated the game 27-7. So the Freezer Bowl to me in January, I think that was 1982, as the Bengals went to the Super Bowl, and unfortunately lost to the San Francisco 49ers, who won their first Super Bowl championship that year. Over to you, Clown Prince.
Guru, I can't argue with you. If there's one thing you know about, it's being covered in Vaseline. I'm going to go with the Finns this season. Early on, they had a game. They were the noon or the 1 o'clock kickoff, if you're on the East Coast. They had three, four, five different rain delays, and they literally made it into the second half of the Sunday night game. The Mo Man was on his second bottle of Buffalo Trace trying to watch his beloved Finn. That's when they still had hope this season. That has to be most recent and one of my favorites. What is your favorite feature of a weathercast or the Weather Channel?
I'm assuming Double K is probably going to go somewhere dirty on this one, so I'm going to try to keep it clean. My favorite part of the Weather Channel or weather forecasting are these knuckleheads who are outdoors during tornadoes, hurricanes, other natural disasters. I mean, these ass clowns will be on TV telling everyone who's watching to stay indoors. It's too dangerous to be outside. Yet there they are in the 70-mile-an-hour winds acting like heroes. There is a tremendous video online of a weather lady who I think is in Ireland doing it during a terrible storm, talking about how dangerous it is. And within seconds, she is blasted in the side of her head by a flying stop sign that knocks her completely off camera. Take some time, Bozo Posse, to look that one up. It is well worth your time. Double K.
Well, I love watching the Mexican version of the Weather Channel, where the women are always scantily clad, talking in Spanish, shaking their derrieres, telling us how to stay out and enjoy the sun, and they tell you how to tan or not tan, and it is quite outstanding theater to me. I can't get enough of it. Over to you, Clown Prince.
No surprise there. Mine has to be, if you're a meteorologist or an aspiring meteorologist, the dream job has to be get the gig in San Diego. I mean, it's 80 with a slight breeze and beautiful with no humidity every day. You could literally hit the replay button and head to happy hour early every single day. Use both games for these fantasy predictions and predict the games. We're going to move quickly. We're not going to hit every team's player at every position. We're just going to give you our best pick and maybe something on the position. Evaluate these QBs, Mo Man. Four teams.
All right, I'm going to I'm actually hold off my predictions to the last position we do. But to me, it seems obvious Tom Brady and Drew Brees should be get the nod here at QB. But I am here to say not so fast. I think St. Patrick is a different cat. He is not Alex Smith. Andy Reid will not get scared and conservative like he has in the past. Does not mean he will outplay Brady. But I believe both those guys will play big on Sunday. NFC, Jared Goff will do whatever Boy Wonder tells him to. And I think the return of Talib to cover Thomas and keep Peters away from him will make a difference. It's close. But I think Goff has the slightly better weapons. And I like the fact the Rams have a little redemption in their minds. Double K.
If you're in a fantasy league or planning to play a fantasy team, I love going with Drew Brees. I think that he's going to put it up early and often and going to have to put up some big numbers to keep them in the game, because I think the Sheldon Rankins injury for New Orleans is going to force that to be a shootout for the Saints to have any chance to win that game, because I think the Rams will be able to run it and they'll try and run it down the Saints' throat. So Drew Brees, to me, I think he'll be in the trail and throwing all day long. So I definitely like him, especially with the game in Kansas City potentially being impacted by serious weather. Over to you, Clown Prince.
Brees is probably the safest play. He's the better quarterback in that game, the most experienced, and it's going to be 70 degrees with no weather whatsoever. I like 3 to 4 quarterbacks, but Brees is my pick just because he's in the dome at home. Evaluate the running backs.
Well, in the NFC, this is, I mean, as evenly matched as you can get. I think both these backfields have dual threats, speed guys, power guys. I think it's a push, and it will depend on which defense plays better. In that case, I would give the nod to the Rams. I think that defensive line is going to play better. The hoodie and the pass seem to have a huge advantage in the backfield, especially with Kareem Hunt gone for the season. But the Chiefs have also found something special in those two Williams boys. So I give a slight edge to the pass here and expect them to try to dominate the line of scrimmage and also time of possession. But hopefully they will not be able to do that. Double K.
Oh, I think there's a lot of running backs who could have put up some very nice numbers this week. If you're you know, looking to play a team, there could be some great inexpensive buys, like C.J. Anderson potentially won't be a huge number, or Mark Ingram may not be a huge number. James White could be an interesting number. I expect for Kansas City to win the game, though. Andy Reid's going to have to utilize Mr. Damian Williams early and often for them to win the game, and I expect that to happen. I expect this to be a totally different game plan because of Reed wants to throw something at the hoodie that he doesn't expect, and Damian Williams will run it over 30 times and have 150 yards on Sunday night. Over to you, Clown Prince.
I would be shocked with that, and I hope I'm shocked. I'm going to go low value here. I think the running back position is stacked with these four teams. I'm going to grab me Damian Williams, C.J. Anderson, like you mentioned, and spend my money elsewhere because I like the running backs left with these four teams. Wide receivers.
The loss of Cooper Kupp obviously has hurt the Rams enormously, but Thomas has also been maybe the best wide receiver in football the second half of the year. So I'd give a very, very slight edge to the Saints here only because of Thomas's greatness. But I would not be surprised to see a big day from Robert Woods, the man Troy Aikman called the greatest receiver in the NFL last week. To me, the Chiefs have a clear edge at receiver. Sorry, I should have given a little pause there for the joke. To me, the Chiefs have a clear edge at receiver over the Pats. But as I've said before, I will not be surprised at anything the hoodie draws up in a big spot. Double K.
Well, I think that the Rams will try and do everything they can to keep Thomas in check and not let him go bonkers like he did in their first meeting or what he did to the Eagles last week. But that allows other people to be open, and we'll see if Drew Brees takes advantage, which I think he will. I agree. I think Tyreek Hill has the potential of a big game, especially running the ball, not just catching it. But I also think Julian Edelman is back as Brady's security blanket. And you saw last week some very creative ways to get him the ball. Would not be surprised at all if that continues on Sunday night. Over to you, Conference.
I love me some Tyreek. He's been on every one of my fantasy teams all season. He's on my postseason fantasy team. I will keep with the fastest man in the National Football League, Mr. Tyreek Hill, as my number one wide receiver. Go ahead and pay for him. Tight end thoughts.
Yeah, the tight end is interesting for me. I mean, I think it's a push in the NFC. Like, I don't expect Ben Watson or Gerald Everett to play a huge role in this game, free the team. I think the Chiefs have an enormous advantage in the AFC game. Gronk looks like a mummy out there, like he's barely even moving around. Great. So he's playing a role in blocking in the running game. Congratulations. That's great, but that's not why he's there. It'll be interesting, though, to see which guy Belichick chooses to take away on Sunday, to your point, Clown Prince. Will it be Tyreek or will it be Kelce? I think whichever guy is singled up is going to have a huge, huge game at Arrowhead for the Chiefs. I'm going to pick with my head and my heart for both these games and say the Rams get some redemption for the loss in the Big Easy earlier this season. Head to Atlanta with a 37-31 victory. And anyone in the Bozo Posse who has listened to any of these podcasts over the last few years here knows where I'm going in the AFC. Andy Reid gets to his second Super Bowl, and the Chiefs flush away years of playoff torment. And the Clown Prince is in the house on Sunday at Frigid Arrowhead as the Chiefs signal an end to the Pats dynasty. 38-24 Chiefs, and rip another seat out of that stadium, Clown Prince. Double K to you.
Well, I definitely think Kelce's probably clearly the most expensive by far of these four teams. But I think it was shown last week he only caught a couple passes. But in extreme cold weather, if the Patriots decide to not use him as a battering ram blocker, that decide to throw him a few passes, good luck trying to tackle that man downfield if you're some smaller linebackers or defensive backs. It took three or four guys to take him down on one pass he caught. So would not be shocked if Gronkowski shows up big on Sunday night, especially knowing it could be his last game, which it looks like he's going to retire and decide to become a professional wrestler so he can continue to mess around with all of the ladies that he has a long list of. Over to you, Clown Prince.
I'm playing Travis Kelce. Do you really want to live with yourself if you play Gronk, who's a glorified offensive tackle, or anybody who's lining up a tight end for the Ramblers or the Saints? No, thank you. I'll pay for Mr. Kelce. I know I'm going to get some production. Bozo Double Shot. This is a tribute to Philip Rivers. Phil broke his own personal record for bitching and whining during a game while the Bulls got their asses thoroughly kicked at New England. Any recommendations for Phil to help him chill out?
Well, first, the Bozo Posse knows the Mo Man despises this quarterback to the Chargers. He has been despicable for me to watch the last few years. I would recommend two things for bitching Philip Rivers. First, invest in some medical marijuana out there in California and just chill the F out for a few days. Secondly, instead of bragging about never cursing when you're on all these specials on NFL Today and NFL Game Day and everything else, how about stop holding these words in just, again, from whatever traumatic childhood guilt you have going on, and just let the F-bombs flow. Just let them out. You'll feel significantly better. You'll be much less stressed than if you just yelled dadgummit 300 times a day. So just let the F-bombs go, Philip. Double K.
Well, I mean, Rivers really showed himself on Sunday. I mean, he was not good. Their whole team was terrible. It was the worst game plan you can imagine. I think the Bozos totally drunk after a three-day bender could have drawn up a better game plan than Anthony Lynn and his coaching staff did. But Rivers was not good, and to continually cry and bitch and yell at the players, the officials, it's tiring, and it's good to know that a guy like that will never, ever be part of a team winning the Lombardi Trophy. Over to you, Clown Prince.
It was truly unbelievable. I was watching it with a couple buddies, and we got to a point, we start every play, he's bitching at somebody, a referee, somebody on the sidelines, a teammate in the huddle. Like, for God's sakes, leave it alone. My recommendation is he hangs out with that Chargers security guard who got fired before games to relieve some stress. Bozo Posse, if you remember, that gentleman got a little too close to the cheerleaders and played some pocket rockets and got himself fired for pulling his monkey. Maybe Phil needs to do that before games, and he won't be so uptight. It's another chronic pitcher at the top of your bitch list.
Well, he'll also have less kids if he does that too. So, for me, like many times in this podcast, I'll give my players who end up on the medal stand here. We have a tie for the bronze medal in the Mo Man's medal stand between crybaby Cristiano Ronaldo of soccer fame and one of the biggest crybaby floppers in the NBA, James Harden. Silver medal goes to the avocado toast-eating, football-deflating, Uggs-wearing, looking-for-a-flag-every-play crybaby TB12, Tom Brady. And easily, the gold medal goes to a guy who is more talented, more skilled and athletic, bigger, stronger, faster than anyone who has ever played his sport, but also a man who could never have succeeded 20 to 30 years ago in his sport because he would have been dehydrated from all the tears he was crying. Congratulations, LeBron James. You are the winner of the Mo Man, biggest crybaby of all time. Double K.
To me, it's these talking heads on the sports channels that we see all the time. From Stephen A. Smith, even though I loved his rant on Cliff Kingsbury, who we will probably hopefully get to look at his girlfriend in future games, Holly Saunders. I'll give Mr. Kingsbury a hey now on that one. But besides Stephen A., there's Trey Windbag Wingo, who I want to go through the radio and strangle him when I hear him, to many, many others that I could line up. Who was the clown that Stephen A. used to do the show with? It's the Dallas
Skip
fan.
Bayless.
Skip Bayless. We could line them all up, but I am done with all of them. They may say the same thing about us, so who knows? Over to you, clown.
That's easy. I'm going to give you one. It's Jay the Sourpuss Cutler. He's the greatest body language bitch of all time. I've never seen anything like it. He came out of the booth, tried to save the Dolphins. That didn't work. And to my knowledge, he hadn't got back in the booth, so that didn't work for him or the Dolphins. That's going to do it for us for the first segment. Enough of this bitching. When we come back, we're going to give you our playoff most incredible, and we're going to get to the Goose Island Brewery after these messages.
The Southern Bluegrass Fantasy Football Championship, proudly presented by Buffalo Trace Bourbon, is an experience unlike any other. It's a Las Vegas-style event right here in South Central Kentucky. It goes down on August 19th at the Carroll Nicely Conference Center in Bowling Green and is hosted by the WKU Topperettes. A $200 buy-in can win you up to $5,000, $25,000 in total prizes. This season-long fantasy football tournament consists of 12 divisions of 12-team leagues. Compete against the very best fantasy football players in the world. Sign up today at sbffc.com.
Welcome back, Bozo Posse. Our second segment is sponsored by Stoodles Financial. Check them out. Stoodles Financial in Bowling Green, Kentucky. They can do your business from afar. Stoodles Financial. Guru, we'll lead off with you. It's our playoff most incredible so far. Tom Brady and Bill Belichick are 13 of the last 17 years appearing in the AFC Championship game. Number two, Nick Foles. Amazing postseason magic compared to his pedestrian regular season numbers. Number three, Seattle's miraculous wild card backdoor point spread cover thanks to Janikowski's injury over Dallas. And number four, Cody Parkey's tipped double doink missed field goal to end the Bears' season. Pick one of the four, Guru.
Well, all of them are pretty miraculous in a way, but for Brady and Belichick, same player and head coach, and this is their eighth straight AFC championship game to go along with being in 13 of 17 during Brady's career is unbelievable, and I don't think we'll see that matched, or I doubt we see that matched in my lifetime. So to me, the same coach and player being in that many championships is something that we will not see again. Over to you, Mo Man.
Yeah, I agree, Double K. This is not even close for me. It's Brady and Belichick. I mean, they've made the championship game 76% of the time they've been together. That's a better percentage than LeBron James has at the free throw line. They've been through eight straight championship games, as Double K said. But here's a great stat I heard today on the Levitard show that speaks volumes about the advantage they've had over the last 17 years. And this is not to diminish what the Pats have done. It is to crush the awfulness of the Dolphins, Jets, and Bills. The Pats this year were plus 111 overall against the NFL. They were also plus 110 against the AFC East, meaning they were only plus one against the rest of the NFL. The Finns, Jets, and Bills have been an absolute abomination for the last 17 years. Come on, Prince.
Great information, Mo Man, as always. I'm going to give an honorable mention to the Polish canon, a Clown Prince favorite, and he was a favorite once again for different reasons. I happen to have those Sea Hags plus 2.5. And thanks to the Polish cannon shredding a hamstring trying to kick a long field goal, they came in like champions. But my first one
Bad
is
ass.
Cody Parkey. Forget about his tipped double doink missed field goal. We're going to talk about that in our next Bozo shot. But how about this ass clown going on the Today Show for therapeutic reasons? My effing ass. I don't blame Nagy for being upset, the Bears coach. I'd cut his ass as soon as he went on the Today Show. I'd eat the $4.5 million in the cap, and I'd go get me a different kicker. You better show some remorse. Bartman disappeared for 20 years, for God's sakes. Bozo triple shot. The Goose Island Brewery in Chicago constructed a goalpost in front of their brewery and offered anybody free beer for a year if they made a 43-yarder, the same distance Parkey missed. The want-to-be kickers were combined 0 for 101. Guru, do you think you could make a 43-yarder for free beer for a year?
Unfortunately, the Guru knows for sure he would not be able to make a 43-yard field goal. But I think I would at least try it and have some fun. And I would be out there in my birthday suit, totally naked. I don't care what the weather is, hot, cold. I would be out there flaunting it and hoping that I'll be able to adding that to some extracurricular activities after I try missing the 43-yarder. Over to you, Mo Man.
Well, Bozo Posse, the Mo Man was not always a couch-sleeping, Buffalo Trace-guzzling slob. I was once a two-sport Division I athlete back in the early 90s, and so I still view myself as that. So I would need maybe a week or two to stretch, maybe loosen and or sober up, but I have no doubt I could nail a 43-yard field goal. But a couple of very important details, however. Weather would need to be clear, hopefully 25 to 30-mile-an-hour wind in my back, and we would maybe need to kick this thing in Denver or Mexico City. Conference.
Guru, first of all, your extracurricular activities would be cuffed and stuffed by Chicago's finest. And, Mo Man, you'd need a lot more wind than that. I would definitely shred my hammy just like the Polish cannon did. I'd look like a one-legged man in an ass-kicking contest. Not a chance in hell I'm hitting that field goal. How about if you get two kicks with a second kick spotted wherever the first kick landed? Could you do it in two kicks, Guru?
I couldn't do it in two, and I probably couldn't do it in 10, but I would enjoy, and instead of going naked, maybe I'll do a shot at each one. I love the shot of doing some flaming Dr. Peppers, so light them up, throw them in the beer, and continue to do them. Well, who knows, maybe if I get 10 kicks after 10 shots, somehow, maybe I could find, needle in the haystack. Over to you, Mo Man.
All right, Bozo Posse, listen closely. Okay, listen, just dial in here. In all seriousness, this would be an absolute layup. I could probably easily kick the first ball 30 yards, even right now in my fat 280-pound, like, hamstring and calf, like, dangerous blowout state. And then I'd bury the 13-yarder for the win on my second kick. It's a no-brainer. Easily bury that thing. Conference.
Congratulations, Dolphin. Down to 280. That's awesome. Hey, I would be so injured after the first kick. They would have to carry me like Byron Leftwich when he was at Marshall up to the next kick, and I'd take a shot at it left-footed. Not a chance in hell. Other than fear, what I'm quest free for a year. Excuse me,
well,
laughing at ourselves.
I think everyone could guess what the guru would be looking, and that is a year of free couch dances at my favorite gentleman's club. Over to you, my man.
Well, I was really bummed. I was second on this question. I knew I would be because that was one of mine as well. But if it wasn't beer, I would request chicken wings, obviously couch or lap dances, like the guru said, and then or tickets to sporting events of my choice for the entire year, conference.
Ah, I like that one, Mo, man. That last one escaped me somehow. That should be my first one. I'm going with pizza of my choice. I could eat that three meals a day without question. Divisional weekend review. Last weekend, players helped and hurt fantasy owners. Who was a stud that played like a stud?
Oh, it's got to be Todd Gurley. He showed up, played well, and got in the end zone for people who started him. And makes you believe that he has recovered and he's ready to rock and roll going forward. Over to you, my man.
For me, it pains me to say it, but it's got to be Brady. I mean, he's the greatest ever, and he played every bit like it against the San Diego / L.A. Chargers or / frauds on Sunday conference.
Unless you had a cowboy, you probably had a stud that played like a stud someplace. Michael Thomas balled out down in the Big Easy, 200 yards and a touchdown. Him and Breeze were a great stack if you were in some sort of a fantasy format where you could stack players from the same team. Breeze, 4 touchdowns. Thomas went nuts. That stack could have carried you to a victory. Who are you slapping a rubber nose on that disappointed fantasy owners?
Oh, there was many that did. There was outside of Brady and Breeze, the quarterbacks did not do much. I mean, you had Marlon Mack, who was awesome the week prior, laid an egg and then got injured. There was numerous other players, but the L.A. Chargers defense, they were picked as the defense and all by a large majority of people playing in fantasy games last week, and they laid a total brown egg. And why in the world are you playing with 7 defensive backs in a deep zone against the quarterback who can maybe throw it 40 yards? We know Mo Man can throw a ball further than Brady can at his current age. Over to you, Mo Man.
Yeah, I got to agree with that one point, Double K, that, like, the Chargers treated, and Gus Bradley as well, treated Tom Brady like he was Lamar Jackson. Like, what in the hell is he thinking coming from that game plan? But for me, it's a tight race. I'm going to give it 3 dudes. I am securing rubber noses for Andrew Luck. We already talked about bitching Phillip Rivers and the putrid Cowboys defense that allowed 273 yards on the ground to the Lambs as they just ran over them in the divisional round. Clown Prince.
Well, I hope you don't take my Chiefs Kingdom carrying fan card. I have to give it to Patrick Mahomes, and it pains me to say it. 0 touchdown passes for the first time all season. I know he got one on the ground, but if you'd have gone into that game and loaded up Patrick Mahomes and paid the money for him like I did, you expect big production. Don't get me wrong. From a football standpoint, it was awesome. They got a big lead. They ran the football. They did all the things you're supposed to do to win football games. But from a fantasy standpoint, I'm winding up, and for the first time all year, I'm slapping a rubber nose on my man, St. Patrick Mahomes. Who was a Hail Mary play that helped owners?
Oh, I got 2. One was C.J. Anderson. I drafted him in a fantasy league late, thinking hey, you never know if Gurley's 100% or not. Gurley is 100%, but the Rams decided to go with the 1-2 punch, and they were dominant. And Mr. Anderson got 2 touchdowns. But I also got to include Michael Gallup, a rookie who might be a guy to keep an eye on late in your drafts next year as a young wide receiver coming on for Dallas. He had a nice game, hit over 100 yards receiving. And if you put him in your lineup, he had a nice game for you. So keep an eye on Michael Gallup for next season. Over to you, my man.
Now, this is not even close for me. It's C.J. Anderson. I'm not even sure that his family saw this performance coming. Even he tweeted out post-game, "I'm just a fat guy running." That was it. C.J. Anderson, conference.
I'm with you, Mo, man. This bowling ball with ears named C.J. Anderson has been released by 3 different teams the last calendar year. He was on the street just a month and a half ago, and he went nuts against the Cowboys. Everybody thought it was Gurley's show, return to health. It was announced middle of the week, and they went thunder and lightning approach. C.J. Anderson, the fatback, as he calls himself, went nuts, and I hope you were the squirrel. Analyze the futures and fantasy futures of Carson Wentz and Nick Foles. Is there a QB controversy in Philly?
There's no longer a controversy. The Eagles have come out and stated Wentz is their quarterback. I think it may have been different if somehow Foles would have led him to a second straight Super Bowl championship. But I still think that Philadelphia will try and utilize Foles to be able to trade him in some way to get a draft pick or two. But we shall see. We don't know exactly how that'll all work. It's still being discussed, and there's cap issues associated with it. But Wentz will be the Eagles' starting quarterback. I expect him to be a late quarterback one in next year's draft. I think Foles would be a guy in a 2-quarterback league you may want to consider drafting. At best, I look at Foles as a, you know, maybe backup quarterback, or more likely a guy that falls in the bottom third tier of quarterbacks in production going forward with another organization and team. Over to you, my man.
Yeah, I totally agree, Double K. Least shocking thing here ever. There's no controversy in Philly. Doug Peterson said today that Wentz is the quarterback. Nick Foles, for me, will end up either in Jacksonville, in Miami, God, I hope not, or as Eli's replacement with the Giants. Clown Prince.
Well, Doug Peterson, give him credit, he nipped this thing in the butt right away and put an end to the controversy. He announced Carson Wentz as their starter moving forward. I would have really liked to have seen what would have happened if Alshon Jeffrey wouldn't let one slip through his hands. He would have let him on a drive and into the championship game and into the Super Bowl once again. It would have gotten real interesting in the city of brotherly love. I'm just the opposite of you bozos. I'm keeping Nick Foles. I'm signing him. He's a Philly legend. He's their guy. He's Rocky Balboa qualities. I love me some Nick Foles for that team in that city. And I'm trading Carson Wentz, and I'm getting me a King's ransom. I bet you get 2 first-rounders for him at least. The Clown Prince out on a contrarian limb. That's going to do it for us. If my fat ass is out on a limb, something's going to break. So we're going to get to a commercial. We'll be right back to talk about new coaches and one more tribute to the great Mean Gene after these words.
The Southern Bluegrass Fantasy Football Championship, proudly presented by Buffalo Trace Bourbon, is an experience unlike any other. It's a Las Vegas-style event right here in South Central Kentucky. It goes down on August 19th at the Carroll Nicely Conference Center in Bowling Green and is hosted by the WKU Toperettes. A $200 buy-in can win you up to $5,000, $25,000 in total prizes. This season-long fantasy football tournament consists of 12 divisions of 12-team leagues. Compete against the very best fantasy football players in the world. Sign up today at sbffc.com.
Final segment sponsored by Fantasy Jocks. Check them out for all your fantasy needs at fantasyjocks.com. Dolphin Mo will lead us off once again. These are NFL coaching hires and what their fantasy impact might be next season for their new teams. We'll start with a pack and Matt LaFleur.
Matt LaFleur, please wake me up at the end of 2019. Did anyone watch how the Titans played on offense this season? I mean, how the hell does that guy get a head coaching job? The Vikings and Bears are already significantly better than the Packers, and that is not going to change with Matt LaFleur in charge, Double K.
Well, I think LaFleur is being brought in to see if he can somehow have a relationship with Aaron Rodgers, and it combined, the two can put together an offense that will allow Mr. Rodgers to succeed. I don't have a lot of confidence in this one. I'm questioning how LaFleur is getting this job. It shows that anyone that's connected to the Rams head coach, he already has a tree. The guy's been a head coach for 2 years, and he already has a coaching tree. Amazing what's going on there. But I don't know exactly what will happen in Green Bay. We shall see. It will be interesting, and the guru currently plans to steer clear of Packers next season. Over to you, Mo Man. Or, I mean, Clown Prince.
You bozos are all over it, like a bath in a ho-ho house. I do not like the Matt LaFleur hiring. If you're Green Bay, are you not calling Bruce Arians and saying, hey, we got a blank check waiting on your big ass. Come on over here and win us a couple Super Bowls. I cannot believe this hire. And they trumped it by bringing in Nathaniel Hackett as the pseudo-offensive coordinator. Did you see what he just did in Jacksonville? And I watched his daddy, Paul Hackett, throw screen passes to Kimball Anders at Old Arrowhead Stadium on 3rd and 10 over and over. Get the Hacketts out of there and get LaFleur out of there. Poor hire by the Pack. The Brownies, Freddie Kitchens.
Sorry, Cleveland. The Browns, you're going to brown. Freddie Kitchens, to me, is like the guy at the local grocery store who's had to step in as the manager because the regular guy called out that day. Just happens to be on the day before Thanksgiving. So the store makes a killing. Most money they've made all year. So the next day, management fires the actual manager and gives the job to Freddie Kitchens the day after Thanksgiving. So good luck, Cleveland. You're taking whatever you did this year and send that thing back about 15 years. Disaster. Double K.
Wow, the Mo Man and I agreeing again. I look at Kitchens walked into an unbelievable situation where the John Dorsey was dismayed the decision to pull the plug on Hugh Jackson, but the ownership group, the owners, has some family said, if Hugh goes, you got to also get rid of Todd Haley, which I don't think was ever part of Dorsey's plan. So due to Haley also needing to be fired because the owners demanded it, Kitchens wound up with a guy never calling plays before getting to take over as the OC when he hadn't been any more than like a quality control coach, or I think he was a tight ends coach, and now he's a head coach. I mean, Greg Williams really was, the guy that, spearheaded the, attitude of what the Browns played with the second half of that year. And, he was, shown the door, and they replaced him with Steve Wilks, who, the jury is out on whether Wilks can coach or not. A guy that was, fired after one season. So who knows what in the world's going on in Cleveland, but there's a lot of egos, to say the least, that Freddie Kitchens will have to manage there, and a lot of those players will be coming up for big-time money all at the same time. So good luck to Cleveland trying to decide who to keep and not to keep. With how you were set up by the baseball experts that were asked to run the team before Dorsey was given the keys. Over to you, Clown Prince.
Well, Guru, Freddie Kitchens was actually the Cleveland running back coach when training camp started. And if I'm the Cleveland running back coach with Hugh Jackson, a.k.a. Ulysses at the helm, what I'm doing in training camp in the early season, I'm calling friends of mine in the insurance and real estate business and just trying to get a lead on some jobs outside of football. And instead, this ass clown who's playing Captain Hardass is now the head coach. So God bless Freddie Kitchens. Broncos, Vic Fangio.
Anything going on in Denver right now? John Elway seems like he does not have a grip on things out there. And I feel like the Fangio hire is another example of this. Like, this is an experienced coach who's been in the NFL and he's had some success in the league, but has never been given a chance before. So when that happens, that's a huge red flag to me. there's usually a reason why a guy like that has not gotten a job before. So I do not expect things to change for the better in Denver at all, Double K.
I'm going to disagree with the Mo Man on this one. I like Vic Fangio getting this opportunity. It was 32 years since this man got an interview as a head coaching candidate. He was a hot commodity 32
yeah,
years ago.
Yeah, there's a reason why.
But he is continually been a defensive coordinator for quality defenses. Denver has a good semblance of defensive talent. They've also brought in Mike Munchak to be their offensive line coach. I think that they're going to put together a solid team, but in the end, it's going to come down to what can Elway do at the quarterback position. He has failed mightily after Peyton Manning had to retire due to injury. The Paxton Lynch draft pick didn't work. Case Keenum is not the answer. They got to find a starting quarterback. And unfortunately, the 2019 draft doesn't have a clear, for sure, starting quarterback, maybe with the exception of Mr. Haskins from Ohio State. Over to you, Clown Prince.
Vic Fangio sounds like a man that should be breaking legs to collect bets from a downtown book, not an NFL head coach. A hell of a defensive coordinator. Time will tell if he's a head coach. Jets, Adam Gase, right in the Mo Man's wheelhouse. Mo Man, you still with us?
Sorry, just got cut off. I apologize, Tom Prince.
Oh, no worries. Adam Gase.
Where were
you? I thought you heard the name
Adam
Gase and you passed out.
I got cut off. Well, I got to tell you, Bozo Posse. I have liked Adam Gase during his time in Miami. He was a 500 head coach, and he did not have his quarterback for more than half of those games. He won with a healthy Ryan Tannehill, and he will have a better quarterback moving forward in New York, I have no doubt, with Sam Darnold. So I do have to say, his press conference, though, in New York the other day was a huge red flag. Gase struggled with the media in Miami slightly, and there were more reporters at that introductory press conference than probably after every game in Miami. So his perceived arrogance and certainly his thin skin could be a major, major problem for the Jets and for that media moving forward. Double K.
Totally agree with the man on this one. Gase, I think, has to win and win fast or he'll be shutting the door. It appears that he definitely is not seeking control of the roster, which he had in Miami, which is likely a good thing. But I agree that you got to be able to, deal with the media as a New York head coach, and he wanted no part of it. And he also, in Miami created a lot of enemies very quickly. So he's going to have to walk in and, be willing to, work with people a lot easier than he did in his first opportunity, or he may be two and done very quickly. Over to you, Cloud Prince.
You know, the phrase deer in headlights is often used, and if you saw the introductory presser, just check him out. He looked like a deer in headlights. Good luck, Mr. Gase. I don't like his future with the Jets. He did hire Greg the Lunatic Williams, who I thought was headed to Kansas City to be their next DC to replace Bob Sutton. So at least his defense will be in good hands, yet crazy hands. Cardinals, Cliff Kingsbury.
Well, first, Gase did look at deer in headlights if the headlights were filled with cocaine. In terms of Cliff Kingsbury, I mean, please excuse me for a second. They just hired Cliff Kingsbury to be their head coach. That dude went 35-40 at Texas Tech.
Red Raiders.
So shoot him up, Red Raiders. I'm going to go next with this one, Double K.
Oh, it's great to be Cliff Kingsbury, You get fired at Texas Tech. USC hires you to collect the paycheck for a couple of months. You're walking around with Holly Saunders as your girlfriend, and Arizona offers you their head coaching job. And he's going to convince Arizona to draft Kyler Murray with the first pick in the draft and trade Josh Rosen. So who knows what in the world's going on? But Cliff Kingsbury, you're the man. Over to you, Clint Prince.
I've been to Lubbock, Texas, and I've been to Phoenix, Arizona. God bless Cliff Kingsbury for getting a professional raise and moving from Lubbock to Phoenix. I think Steve Keim, their GM who had DWI last year, he might have been out with the front office and they all got hammered and said, "That's what the hell, let's hire Kingsbury." Bucks, Bruce Arians.
All right, finally, a hire that I can enjoy here. I love this hire for Tampa. I've always been an Arians fan. I think he will do well down there and help Jameis actually get to a different level. He's one of the few guys I think that maybe has a chance to do that. I also expect he'll be able to attract free agents down there and bring other weapons to what is already a skilled offense. I would expect the Bucs to take a huge jump down there with Arians at the helm. He has the best hat in the league by far as a head coach, and he's going to get weapons to join him down there in Tampa. And he's also said, maybe most importantly, Bozo Posse, that he would love to see the cream suit uniforms brought back to Tampa. The Mo Man is absolutely on board with that. Double K.
100% in agreement with the Mo Man. This is the best hire the teams have made, coaching hires so far. Arians is a proven winner. He's also put together most of his former Arizona coaching staff back, including bringing Todd Bowles, not a good head coach, but a very good defensive coordinator, in to help him. And if they can improve their defense, that offense scored enough points this season to win a lot of games. And with the Cam Newton shoulder injury, would not be shocked at all if Arians has Tampa Bay competing against New Orleans for that division
Indeed.
Next season, and for sure in the playoffs, at least as a wild card. Over to you, Clown Prince.
Many people looking at this six-pack of coaches would say, without question, Cliff Kingsbury's the best-looking dude on the list. The Mo Man has said it many times. B.A. Bruce Arians is a dead ringer for yours truly, the Clown Prince, and that makes him a runaway winner for the best-looking cat on this list. In all seriousness, Seamus and Mike Evans just moved way up on my draft board for next season.
Yes, sir.
Bruce Arians will bring offense back to Tampa. You can count on a return of Seamus Winston. He's going to go to famous Winston, Evans, Humphreys, if D-Jax comes back, and whatever tailback they bring in, whether it's Le'Veon Bell, Ronald Jones, the rookie who couldn't read a playbook, or Peyton Barber, whoever gets the starting nod down there, get them all on your draft board because B.A. will turn them into winners. Love me some Bruce Arians. Next up, the Bengals and Dolphins still haven't hired coaches. This is right in our Bozo's wheelhouse. They call him the Queen City Guru, born and raised in Cincinnati, and has dominated fantasy leagues in his hometown for years. The Mo Man, of course, he's denigrated his body with a Dolphins tattoo and has lived a life of torture with the Fins. Any thoughts on what's going on in Cincy and South Beach? We'll start with the Mo Man.
Well, I will leave all things Queen City to the guru for sure here. But all signs point to Pat's pseudo-defensive coordinator, Brian Flores, being the next Dolphins head coach. I don't think anyone really knows how good any of these guys are until they actually have a job for a year or two and we find out if they can actually lead men or if they're just guys who are good coordinators. But Flores comes with a great reputation as a leader and a communicator. It also sounds like Catfish and Caldwell going to be joining the Dolphins staff as the OC. And Colts offensive line coach, Dave DiGuglielmo, who took that offensive line in 1 year from one of the worst in the league to literally not getting Andrew Luck touched all season long, been released of his duties and is apparently going to join Flores in Miami as the OC coach or the offensive line coach, which would be a great certainly a great upgrade for the Dolphins. It's probably time to tank, though, in South Florida. And Torres may be given some longer rope by Stephen Ross than anybody else was as they look to 2020 and 2021 for a quarterback. Double K.
Well, with Flores, I hope he is given an opportunity. I like his story. The guy, you know, comes from nothing, and hopefully he's given a chance. I think that if he's given an opportunity and they, the front office does a good job with him, I think that Dolphins fans will be quite happy. from a Bengals standpoint, they had to fire Marvin Lewis, who in 16 seasons, he did a very solid job dealing with Mike Brown, you know, an owner who, prior to Marvin Lewis, they were the laughing stock in the league. But after going 0-7 in the playoffs and three straight losing seasons, Marvin had to go, and most of his staff needed to as well. They've also been dismissed. They've hired a guy who knows for sure what he is, but he's connected to the Sean McVay tree. But at least the guy is a former quarterback. He was a very solid quarterback in college, and Zach Taylor. He does seem to have some input with McVay and putting together their offensive design. So the Bengals need a new voice, and they definitely are looking to try and capture, putting together some more exciting offense. Will hopefully sell some more tickets. Their season ticket base attendance was down into the mid-30s this season. And Mike Brown, the key thing for him is making money and not trying to spend money. So for them to make money, they got to hopefully hope that Zach Taylor is the right guy and they can turn it around and at least be an exciting team on the field. But we shall see. Over to you, Clown Prince.
All good information. And, Guru, I think this Taylor thing is a smokescreen. As I reported 2 weeks ago, the Bungholes are in serious negotiations with Pete Rose, a.k.a. Charlie Hustle, to take that thing over. There'll be betting kiosks all around the stadium. There'll be trick plays galore trying to cover the spread. He'll see stuff you've never seen before out of Charlie Hustle. I hope they go Pete Rose as their head coach. I'd laugh my ass off. I'm the only one that's brought that out. And Mo Man, I've never seen this close to the end of a regular season a team in the NFL already talking about tanking. It's tank for two. It's flub for from underway in Miami. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It looks like next season.
Tank for Tua. Keep Tua far away from Miami, please.
Their run of repeated mediocrity could come to an end this season as they could get their ass kicked start to finish. Final bozo shot. Before I do, I want to go back to the coaching hires, fires, and what's going on. This is one close to our heart. Our own Queen City guru has been humping the leg of one Jim Bob Cooter up in Detroit. He's been their offensive coordinator. I believe he got cut loose. Guru, will Jim Bob Cooter resurface in the NFL, or is he headed back to Dukes of Hazzard?
I think Jim Bob will resurface, but the offensive coordinator jobs are disappearing quick, but I expect him to at least survive as a quarterback's coach somewhere in the NFL, and hopefully he gets an opportunity to show that he can continue to get it done. I don't think he was given a fair shot this season, as Detroit was a mess from the get-go.
Now, you were humping his leg, crying for him to be an OC, and the next thing you know, as the moment said, he gone. Time for our final bozo shot. One more tribute to Mean Gene Okerlund. We love us some Mean Gene. One of his favorite sayings, as attributed to him on the Levitard show recently, was, "Work it." Give me an NFL player that should have a saying, "Blank it."
Well, I love the tributes to Mean Gene. I've been seeing and reading recently. It says tremendous. This question was a challenge for me. But I have to go with wrap it to Philip Rivers. I think 9 kids is probably enough at this point. Double K.
Oh, I got to go with one of my favorite reporters covering the NFL, and that is Josina Anderson. Every week, or JoJo, and she tells all the players to show it. I think we know where she's going there. Over to you, Clemson.
Show it.
Oh, some outstanding tributes. I thought you were going to say clip it for her fingernails that poses claws when she's doing a report. I'm going to go with Josh Gordon. Hope he winds up in Canada until dope becomes legal down here. Hope he's not too old to play. I'm going to go with smoke it.
from Josh Gordon, just ahead of Cody Shankopotamus Parkey. Shank it. That's going to do it for us. We've had a lot of fun with you with our Bozo Shots, also hopefully disseminating plenty of fantasy information. Remember, Bozo Posse, yesterday's gone, tomorrow is never promised, so enjoy the hell out of today. For Dolphin Moe and the Queen City Guru, this is the Clown Prince signing off. We'll see you next time on Fantasy Football Bozo.